Ladies and gentlemen, welcome wrestling fans worldwide to Knoxville and the Great Smoky Mountains for the Ron Fuller Tennessee Studcast.
6 feet 9 inches tall, 265 pounds.
This historic podcast from one of the most respected and successful wrestlers and promoters will follow the footsteps of the largest and oldest wrestling family on the planet.
The Tennessee Stud, Ron Fuller.
Through 93 years and four generations.
The Stud has arrived.
Old school or new fan, this unique broadcast will educate and captivate as Ron details decades of professional wrestling's growth with truly unforgettable stories.
I want those people out there at home to hear the Stud.
Sit back and enjoy the ride with the Tennessee Stud.
The Tennessee Stud. You will learn that name. You will remember it.
And now,
the Stud is here.
Please welcome your Studcast host of television and radio fame, Tony Basilio.
Oh, that music can only mean one thing, ladies and gentlemen, and that's that it's time for another award-winning, action-packed, often imitated, never duplicated, you tried the rest, now try the best, and any other pizza box slogan I can come up with. It is your Studcast. And dare I say, just a week and a half past our first Super Studcast featuring Andre the Giant. With more information over at tnstud.com, the great Ron Fuller's website. But anytime we get together, it's super, as far as I'm concerned. Because anytime you spend time with the Stud, you're going to have a super time. Today we're going to go back, speaking of super, back to the 60s. The late 60s. And a name that's going to come up who, as far as influential figures in cable television in the latter part of the 20th century, very few would take a backseat to the man who will take center stage today. And we're talking about none other than Mr. Jane Fonda at one time in his life. And Stud, I can't wait to go through today's episode as we're in episode 29. This is going to be crazy.
Yeah, it's going to be a different one. I mean, we talk a whole lot about wrestlers and we've talked some basketball and that type of thing. But we're going to get in today to an individual that's remarkable. And his wife was a remarkable lady as well. Controversial and remarkable, I guess you would say. But yeah, we're going to take people in a little different direction today. We're going to talk a lot again about my dad. We're still in his era. We're in the 60s here, late 60s now. We're getting close. In fact, I'm just about to get my first match within maybe by the next episode that we do. So we're about to break out that third generation. All of us are going to start doing our thing in the ring and start trying to make some type of name and reputation for ourselves. But before we go there, Tony, I just want to thank people real quickly about following us and those people that have jumped on board with the Super Studcast. And real quickly now, in another few days, they're going to get that rest of the Andre story. I'm just very, very pleased at the support that we've gotten, and the comments are just absolutely astronomical. People say they've never heard anything like it. It portrays Andre in a wonderful way. I hope that people feel that way about it, and some people say so. So it's wonderful for me to have the opportunity to do that. 2 hours. It's a long, long segment to do. Takes a lot out of you. But I'm speaking from the heart about one of my great friends in the ring, Andre, and it's a pleasure to be able to have done it. And I just really appreciate the support and the people jumping on board to support what we've done there with the Super Studcast.
Well, it's just so much fun. I mean, that was unbelievably great fun to be a part of. And I hope folks have even a passing interest in Andre the Giant. They will pay the couple bucks that it costs and get involved there. More information at tnstud.com. Stud, you really have my interest peaked as somebody who loves the broadcasting business. And Ted Turner has this fascination, there I said his name, he has this fascination with wrestling that I guess, what, dates back to his childhood? Was he just always a fan?
I don't know a whole lot of the history here about Ted other than conversations that I had with Dad. One in particular. And I guess this is the goodest place to start as any. Dad, now we're in the late 60s. Now we've been in Atlanta for 4 years, close to 4 years. And he's had two mega events already. He did the one in 65 with 38,000. He did the one at the raceway in which it rained that did somewhere in the 20s. I never got that exact figure. But two mega events that he has done there during this time frame. And they're still on WHBQ, the Eyes of Atlanta, Channel 11. But program is just cranked. Its numbers are huge. And I think that's where Ted Turner comes into the picture, I suppose, is, first of all, as you say, he was a great wrestling fan. He really liked wrestling. But he was a bigger fan, and he was a whiz and a genius when it came to communication, especially the television industry. And he was way, way, way ahead of his time. He gets to be friends with Dad. He likes Dad because he's a big star. Dad's a big star. He's a bigger star than Ted. At this point, he's a much bigger star than Ted is. So Ted is marking out to Dad. He's saying, geez, man, your dad is, you know, he never talked to me, but Dad said, you know, I got this guy named Ted Turner, and he's, you know, he's spending a lot of time down. When I go to TV to do TV, he takes a lot of my time, and he wants to talk to me about things. And he's really, said, I think he's a sharp guy. So we talked one morning about, have a conversation at the table, and for some reason, it's just Dad and I. And he says, you know, I want to kind of talk to you about this guy named Ted Turner and tell you what he's been talking to me about. So I was like, I've never heard of Ted Turner. And, you know, very few people in Atlanta at that point have heard of Ted Turner. At that time, I think he owned the billboard company, a big billboard company in Atlanta, for sure. And he was Dad started talking to me about stuff that I had never heard. It's the first time in my life that I ever heard the term cable TV. He says, this guy's talking to me about getting involved with him in cable television. And I said, what is cable TV? Now, back in those days, there was only three stations in most cities. You had your ABC, your CBS, and your NBC, and you might have had a UHF station in the bigger cities. You might have four television channels that you could tune into. You still had antenna on the top of your house so that you could get the signal from these regional television stations that were close to you. It was a different day and time. And there's this guy named Ted Turner now that's talking to Dad about cable TV. And I'm a young and inquisitive guy, and I'm a senior in high school. And I say, and you know, what is cable TV? And he, well, I don't really understand it. He says, he tells me that there's going to come a day in the future when you'll be able to get hundreds of channels with just one cable hookup. And I was like, what's a cable? I mean, you know, we're pretty ignorant. Both of us are pretty ignorant about what he's presenting to Dad, but Dad's kind of running it by me because I guess he figures, you know, well, you're a senior in high school and maybe you got, you know, some things that I don't. He asked me then, he goes, what about satellite TV? And I go, well, you know, I know what a satellite is, but what does a satellite have to do with television? He says, well, he says that there's going to be a day when they'll bounce signals off of a satellite, and he'll be able to reach people on a global basis with one television station. That's like, I started, what a conversation. It's like, wow, are you kidding me? How does he know that? And he says, well, he's somehow involved with the development of it. That's kind of where he thinks it's going to go. So he says, have you ever thought if there was a way to do this satellite, that these channels that bounce their signals off of satellites, they're going to control the television industry? You'd be able to sell your product or put your wrestlers worldwide by being hooked up with him. The longer we talked, the more ignorant I began to feel. It was like, I don't understand all this stuff. So I said, what's the bottom line, Dad? And he says, the bottom line is the guy really likes me. He thinks that I'm a sharp guy. He's seen what I've done with wrestling here in the last 4 or 5 years. He wants me to become a part of his deal. I said, you mean he wants you to own part of his company? And he goes, yes. So we sat there scratching our heads, both of us, trying to figure out cable TV, satellite TV, TBS, TNT in the future, CNN, all the things that Ted Turner is going to be down the road. And we walk away from the table, basically. It was like Dad's the only, when I look back on this conversation, Tony, the only thing I can say to myself is it's the only big miss, the only big opportunity my dad ever missed was that conversation that morning. And all to do with what's about to happen in the world with communication.
Did Turner give him an opportunity to buy into something? Was he trying to pitch him and becoming an investor?
He was trying to get him to come in for part of the company for free. He basically said, you have, I think Ted was looking at the success of Atlanta Wrestling and then seeing in the future the ability to be on a satellite, to bounce that signal off that satellite, and what's going to happen with TBS, TNT, all of those channels, and seeing the product of wrestling itself. Ted was a wrestling fan, so by getting Dad involved with him, he's going to eventually get involved in wrestling through direct contact with the wrestler. And that's where I think Ted wanted to go with that. So I asked him, I said, does he want to sell you part of the company? And he says, no, he wants me to take a piece of the company and then he'll tell me what he wants me to do. I don't think he ever got that far with his conversation about Ted explaining what he wanted him to do, but I have a pretty good feeling that it was to head something to do with wrestling. Wrestling, as you know, and every wrestling fan around the world, once Ted gets his satellite TV kicked off, he becomes a big major player in that business.
Yeah, and he did through multiple promoters as well. It wasn't like he just went through one. So obviously, he saw the benefit of the programming. And back then, as we've already established, late 60s, well into the 70s, the market shares that wrestling was doing on television in those days was, well, it was obscene compared to today, where everything, as you talk about, is fragmented. I mean, the concentration back then, it was incredible.
Oh, yeah. And you've got the three channels. So you've only got those three channels. And I mean, obviously, when this cable TV does come to be and you've got those hundreds of channels, it's going to fragment big time those numbers. But gosh, those numbers were absolutely outrageous. And when you had a business like Dad had there in Georgia, and you're drawing these huge mega crowds of 38,000 and 20,000 and every week selling out the biggest building in the city, you're going to attract a lot of attention, you know, and there's a sharp guy who sees the future. I mean, he actually sees it way. This conversation is in 1967, I believe, 67 or 68 that we're having. And it's years down the road before that changes. It's years before that happens. But he's already there in his mind. He sees it, and he's going to make it happen. And he's the type of guy that did make things happen.
It's incredible, man. You think about that vision. You're right. We're a good 10 years away from cable even having its first real splashdown. Well, 8 or so years away from it anyway. And here's Ted Turner on the front end talking with your father about it. That's amazing stuff right there.
Yeah. And, you know, before we leave Ted, there's another part of Ted Turner, man, that always really just captured my imagination. Is he was the guy that handled the helm of the America's Cup boat. I mean, he was a sailor, not just a sailor. He was a phenomenal sailor. He had a boat that was the fastest in the world and represented the United States. We can't hardly win that cup anymore. And he just went out there and won it like it was nothing, man. It was like, what a guy. What an individual that guy was.
He was kind of a Renaissance man. You know, the thing about him is he's very polarizing, but he's got this kind of genius thing about him, you know? He's got this kind of genius thing. And that's what it is. I believe, was his boat called Courageous? Does that sound right? Would that be right to you?
That could be the name
Courageous.
Of his boat.
There you go.
Yep. And he won the America's Cup.
Yes, he did.
I don't know what the country was that back in those days, we dominated the America's Cup. I don't know that anybody had ever won it other than America back in those days. And it was very rare if it did happen. Nowadays, you know, there's a lot of great sailing countries around the world. And that cup is now difficult to get anymore. We don't just go out there and dominate that like we did back in those days. But that was just another aspect of that guy that really intrigued me, is that he had all these smarts and he went on to become a mega guy. And years later, you know what's really funny, Tony, in 1985 and so, around in there, I was going into Atlanta and going downtown there to CNN Center. I remember that the wrestling offices were just right there by CNN Center in the same complex. You saw all those CNN people when you were doing wrestling interviews, you were cutting promos and things like that. I became a part of that in a way. Rob goes in there later on, becomes a booker for WCW and for Barnett before WCW. We still remained in, and it was always intriguing to me that even though Dad and him never linked up, we still, our paths crossed, and Dad's path crossed with him many times after that, I'm sure, too. Strange deal, never talked about this subject with anyone before. I just wanted to bring this out. You know, really pretty amazing for a wrestler to be in the company of some individual like that.
No doubt about it. And Stud, where else are we going to go today? Because right now we're in 1967 and things are getting interesting here.
Oh, yeah. Things are really happening. So Dad now, he makes the decision not to head that direction. And what he decides next is pretty dang good. I mean, he's pretty sharp. My old man was pretty darn smart. They have in Georgia no Saturday night town. That's crazy. I mean, in every territory, you want to have your best towns run on Friday and Saturday because that are weekend nights, and you're going to get your bigger crowds. You want to utilize your bigger buildings. That makes your whole business more profitable. So he has no Saturday night town. So he runs these little spot shows. That's what we call them in the business, is he run these small towns, and he would alternate from Griffin, let's say, to Covington, to Rome, Georgia, to little small towns here and there. And he sits down, and somehow he figures this out. He goes and buys a piece of land just outside of Griffin, one of the bigger of the small little towns that were Saturday night towns that alternated around. And he cleared the land with his bulldozer. He hired the contracted the builder to come in and build a building structure on the property. He went in after the structure is built. They built a structure that's probably 1/4 the size of a football field. It's probably 120 feet dimensions, maybe 120 feet by 80 feet steel building, which is back what was standard in those days and times. Then he would go in after the building was done and he would build the bleachers for them. He would build the ring because he was still a welder. He still had the torches. He still had the big shop where he could build stuff all the time. And he would take these buildings, build them out, and then he would use this. The first one he did was in Griffin, Georgia. It had never been done. I don't think anybody had done it in the wrestling business where they actually went and built themselves a building that they could have matches in every week. And then he was smart enough to not just do it with wrestling. He would then to do it with shows. The building was built in a configuration so that the ring sat in the middle of it. And if you just want to take the rings down and the ringside chairs down, you could have a concert very easily. Set a stage in the middle of the floor and you do a concert. So in this Griffin, in this town with which I had played basketball, now it's a couple of years later, he goes and buys the property and he builds this arena in Griffin. He brings in shows. Not only does he wrestle every Saturday night, which is smart because when you wrestle every Saturday or on a weekly event, you can program and you can work angles and you can do things to keep people's interest more than if you're just there 1 month and you come back a month later and they've seen, there's no reason for them to come except for, well, they got wrestling in town again. But when people get into wrestlers and when they get into wrestling and they start thinking these things about these athletes, that they want to see them and they dislike, they start to intensely dislike one and they intensely like another, and they put those two guys together and something unusual happened, and the very next Saturday you can go watch it again, and the very next week you go watch it again. It's what makes wrestling what it is worldwide, at least before Vince came. When you own territories, you utilize your weekends for your big cities, and you fill those buildings every weekend. It was a formula that worked everywhere.
And your dad was so slick to see that, wasn't he? We're talking about the value of vision, and your dad had a ton of that, didn't he?
Yeah, he was way ahead of his time. I always said he was a step ahead, and he would rent his building, and he was a different type of guy in more ways than one. He rented his building in Griffin to George Jones back in the day. Now, George Jones was the drinker, and he liked to party. And George Jones came to the arena in his bus, his tour bus, parked his bus out back, and they sold out the building. Everybody, the building just crammed full of people. And Dad is there that night. You know, he's just one of his first events other than wrestling. He wants to see it be successful. He doesn't want anything to go wrong. And by golly, sure enough, when it comes time for George to come to the stage, he doesn't show on the stage. He's back there in his tour bus, and he's drunk. Mm-hmm. He's alcoholed up, right? Mm-hmm. Which is par for the course for George Jones. Mm-hmm. So Dad and I'm there. I say, where's George Jones? And he goes, I don't know, but I'm going to find out. So I follow him. He talks to some guy, and he goes, George is out there in the tour bus. So he goes right to the tour bus. He bangs on the door. They open the door. He goes up in, and he finds George. George is sitting on a little couch about halfway back through the bus, and there's a TV. They got a little TV up there, and he's just pretty much out of it. And Dad says, hey, you know, you got a full house here out there in that building, and they came to see you. Yeah, but I don't think I'm going to sing tonight. And Dad says, oh, like hell you ain't going to sing. He goes, you're going to sing. He goes, in fact, he goes, I'm going to grab you by your throat. I'll have you singing in this damn bus if you don't get your ass up and get dressed and get out. So Dad basically takes him down to the stage, gets his band all organized, and says, by God, here he is. I don't care, drunk or not, he's going to put on a show. So George goes out and puts on a show, probably drunk like he's been for a lot of his other shows. But the old man wasn't going to stand by and watch him just kill that whole event for himself and hurt his building in the early stages.
So that was a deal where George Jones's management company came to your father and said, we want to use your venue. How many people did it seat?
Seat about 2,000. It was a nice-sized little building, and the bleachers were built. They had a high roof line on it so that the bleachers went back like 12, 14 rows. You set a lot of people in the bleachers alone. When you put the chairs down there, you had a stage for George as an example in this deal, and you probably got 600 chairs at least on the floor, and you've got 1,400 people or so in bleachers themselves. It was a nice size little facility. It was perfectly designed and developed for a small city in which you were going to draw 2,000 people every week. And what happened in that building is it became a huge success, and they packed that sucker every Saturday night. People in that town, it became the thing to do on a Saturday. You didn't go to the movies, you went to wrestling. It's right down there at the wrestling arena. It was a hugely successful deal for Dad, for that company, and it was handed down to others. One identical to that building was built in Tallahassee by Eddie Graham. There are a couple of other places that they built same type of buildings, Rome, Georgia, same type of buildings in which they were built specifically for wrestling, but designed to be used for other things as well, and became successful. They did very great business. And I'm sure as time goes by, Dad leaves that promotion, they probably sold that arena and that land for a significant amount of money.
It's interesting, Stud, hearing you talk about that, because your dad was ahead of the game. The question I would have for you is, how long, when you talk about your dad and he's going great guns there, how would he have promoted? Were you on television back then? Was there a weekly TV show there in that Atlanta market?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yes, sir. Channel 11 had that weekly TV show. It was on Saturdays, and it was a very good time. I think it was somewhere around the 6 or 7 time frame. The old 605 that Brian Last uses right now, when they make that move to the satellite channel, they're going to take that same time slot. Turner's a smart enough guy. He didn't want to risk that you need a better time slot. So they took that same time slot. They started those wrestling programs that is a two-hour block. Once Ted gets his hand on it, it becomes a two-hour program instead of a one-hour program. He built his cable system and his TBS off of the strength of wrestling. And he probably had that in mind way back when he sat and talked to Dad about trying to get him involved in it. He saw that wrestling was such a tremendous product for building audience that he needed to do it for his channel when he got his satellite operation up.
It's really interesting stuff as we talk today on the Studcast. Stud, we're about halfway home here today. Would you like to take a quick time out? Because I know we're going to get some more stuff in on 1967. And then, of course, we have some questions as well, as we have a very active audience here. Stud, talk to me.
Yeah, let's go ahead and take a break real quickly, if that's what, hopefully the fans won't mind that. We haven't taken many breaks lately. We've been trying to fill us with as much content as we can, but this break will be a good announcement. I'm sure Dave's going to have something good here to bring the fans up to date on what's happening, and we'll come back and continue on with late 60s and Georgia territory.
I want to remind you, you're listening to the Studcast. Unbelievably, this is episode 29. And if you would like to get in touch with Ron Fuller, you've got a question, a comment, I encourage you to do that at the Facebook page, Ron Fuller, Tennessee Stud. Again, it's Ron Fuller, Tennessee is spelled out, Stud. On Instagram, on Twitter, Ron Fuller Welch. Again, Instagram and Twitter, you can find the Stud at Ron Fuller Welch. And then the website, tnstud.com. Again, tnstud.com. I do want to remind you that at the website, you'll see the Stud store there with various goodies for you and make some great gift ideas. Speaking of which, the Andre the Giant Super Studcast, which dropped about a week and a half or so ago, would be a tremendous gift for the wrestling fan in your life. Again, the Super Studcast, and be some information there perhaps about some of the future Super Studcasts, one of which will be coming up next month as part of our Super Bowl Spectacular. In the meantime, we'll take a brief time out. David Summers has a word for you, and then we'll pick it back up here on your Studcast.
If you think you know the history of professional wrestling, you don't know Jack or Andre, Sputnik or Bruiser, Ernie or Dory, Harley or Vern, George or Eddie. Now, the history of wrestling is being told by a member of the first family of professional wrestling. Ron Fuller, the Tennessee Stud, is recounting his family's 93-year history of the beginning of professional wrestling. Long before the McMahons, there was Ron's grandfather, Roy Welch, and his father, Buddy Fuller, who invented modern-day wrestling as we know it today. Ron Fuller's Studcast is wrestling storytelling at its highest level. It's a wrestling podcast like no other. And the best news, it's free at tnstud.com. That's tnstud.com. Every past Studcast episode is available now at tnstud.com. It's the true story of professional wrestling's beginning, and it's yours at tnstud.com. Saddle up and take a ride through the Stud store at tnstud.com. Pick from four great 8x10 glossy photos of the Tennessee Stud for only $15. And that includes your shipping and a personal autograph from the Stud. And we just got a new order of Tennessee Stud t-shirts in black or blue, men's sizes small through 3X. And more items are on the way at tnstud.com. Show your Stud spirit with a photo or t-shirt today at tnstud.com. If you haven't heard the Andre the Giant Super Studcast yet, then head over to tnstud.com or patreon.com/studcast. Once you buy the 2-hour Andre the Giant Super Studcast, you'll get the 1-hour rest of the Andre story free. That's right. Donate only $2.99 for the Andre the Giant Super Studcast and get the rest of the Andre story free on January 28th or thereafter. Both of these two great exclusive content events are yours whenever you wish for only $2.99 at tnstud.com or patreon.com/studcast. Saddle up and ride into wrestling history now with Ron Fuller, the Tennessee Stud, at patreon.com/studcast or at tnstud.com. Now, let the storytelling resume on Studcast episode number 29 with Tony Basilio and Ron Fuller, the Tennessee Stud.
And we welcome you back on your Studcast, Tony Basilio, along with Ron Fuller, your Tennessee Stud. They call him the greatest storyteller in the business. Today he's been laying it down. Started with Ted Turner. Now we're talking about 1967 and his father's promotion in Atlanta. Precursor to some hot things that are about to come there in Atlanta. One of the first territory wars and all that stuff just a couple years away. And the Stud's just about to get into the ring himself. Stud, I'm really excited for the weeks to come. Some of this great stuff that's about to happen here on the Studcast. But we've got some more today, some untold parts of the story today. Stud, take it away.
Yeah, it's a great honor. It's always a pleasure to be able to tell these stories, and it excites me when I think about that. I don't prepare, Tony, as you know, I don't write down a whole lot of things, and things come to me while we're talking about one subject. I'll get thoughts from something else entirely, and I kind of did that in this one. I talked a little bit about that building in Griffin, Georgia, and how that turned out for the Georgia territory itself, and what a phenomenal asset it was to the company. That made me think then about the talent. Now, we're talking 67, 68, in the late 60s. Atlanta is just filled with tremendous, tremendous talent. I talked to Dad one time and I said, how do you know when to change people and to look for a different person? And he says, the fans will tell me. And I said, well, how do they tell you? He said, listen to the matches. Go and watch the match and listen to the match. He says, they're going to tell you by their reaction to the people. He says, right now, this particular time, I'm a freshman in college, asking questions all the time. I said, how does that work? He goes, I got a lot of guys that have already contacted me that want to come. But right now, I've got such a good crew. And they're all over, and they're all drawing money. And I don't want to trade them and move them until they've kind of gotten older. And the fans are kind of falling back on them a little bit. And they're not as inspired by them, and they're not into them as much as they were. So I was asking him, you know, I said, well, who do you got? And at this point, he and Ray Gunkel, they own the company. They're tag team champions. And they've been champions now for probably a year, year and a half, pretty much unbeatable. They've probably lost a couple of times, no doubt, but I don't remember to who exactly. But because they're over so well, you've got a lot of guys, tag teams around the country, that want to get in there because, first of all, their payoffs are good. They're drawing money. And business is in really good shape. Anytime you got a territory that's doing well, all the wrestlers want to come because they see that there's a paycheck every week that's going to make them smile. So I say, well, who you got on your waiting list? And he was saying, I've got two guys called the Infernos. They're managed by a guy named J.C. Dykes. This is a team that's going to become a huge team. They're not in at that point. I'd never heard of them. I'm going to find out about these guys, though, that they are really, really good. I said, you got any others? I think I remember him saying, I have another masked team that's really good that wants to come in called the Medics. And they're managed by a guy named Ken Ramey, Dr. Ken Ramey and the Medics. Those guys come in, blow business away in the next couple of years there. They finally get their spot, and they make their move, and they come on in as other people do. Singles competition in there is really good. There are a lot of great, great wrestlers in there at that point. Freddie Blassie is now, he's had an illness, but he's back working 67, 68. He's back doing his thing. He's spending quite a bit of time in the territory. Galento is still there. Mario Galento, Sputnik Monroe is still there. These guys can't be moved out of the number or the talent roster because they are so good. They have been there so long. They are so respected by the fans. They are so, whenever they do some type of angle, anything they do has more meaning than a new guy because of the time that they have been there and the perspective that the fan has upon watching that individual. So you've got those two guys that are there. You got a new guy in there named Dickie Steinborn, who is a great, great wrestler. He comes from a wrestling family. His dad is a gentleman named Milo Steinborn, who owns Orlando. He is the promoter in Orlando in the Florida territory. I'm going to work for Milo a whole bunch in the coming years. And Milo is a strong man, a legitimately one of the strongest men in the history of the world was Milo Steinborn. And his son, Dickie, is a phenomenal wrestling talent who does great for dad, goes in there and can wrestle as a single. He can put on a mask. Tim Woods, the wrestling one, Tim Woods, wore a mask as wrestling one. And long before wrestling two, which was the great Johnny Walker, obviously, and going to become a monster star in Georgia down the road. Tim Woods is becoming a star in Georgia during that time frame. And he gets hurt. Dickie Steinborn comes in, puts on Woods's mask and dresses in Woods's white tights and Woods's white boots and goes out there and wrestles 3 weeks in a row. And the fans can't tell that it isn't Tim Woods. I mean, he's that talented. There's another wrestler in there who's on top that's great. He's a mask guy. His name is Doug Gilbert. He is called the Wrestling Pro. He is a phenomenal, phenomenal talent. Wins the Georgia title, I think, four times on four different occasions. And Dickie and him are going to leave there when the Wrestling Pro leaves. Dickie Steinborn and the Wrestling Pro will leave and go to Vern Gagne's territory and become one of the all-time great teams for Vern Gagne. Dickie Steinborn, a tremendous talent. Tag match, single match, it doesn't make any difference. Later on, when I start my first wrestling company, Southeastern Wrestling in Knoxville in 1975, Dickie Steinborn comes and works for me. Gosh, I love the guy. He's just a phenomenal guy and just he gets over everywhere, wherever he goes. Fabulous talent. Bill Dromo, big guy, got great skills. Been star in many, many different places. He's in that crew. You still got Bob Armstrong. Now he's 2 years in. He's becoming a really great worker. You can use him anywhere on the card, tag match, single match, up and down, first match, last match. I mean, Bob Armstrong is already 2 years in, 3 years in. Takes most guys 5, 6, 7 years to find their mojo, to find what it's all about, to become what they're going to be, and to make it to the top. Bob was one of those guys that made it pretty quick. When I went to Florida, I was able to do it in about 3 years. It just takes most people a lot longer period of time to get that done. But usually if you've got the talent that can do it in that type of time frame, you're going to have great success as the future goes on and things continue to grow. So they're running a tremendous operation.
Well, hearing you talk about all those names, Stud, it's just incredible to think about that galaxy of stars you're around. And here you are, late teen, you haven't quite gotten in the ring yourself, but you're around these guys. And did you ever find yourself later on in your life going, man, look at Freddie Blassie over there, who goes on and becomes kind of a world famous guy in the business. And boy, I knew him when? Back in the Atlanta days, or this guy or other guys. I mean, you got to sit there and think, what an incredible childhood I had to have a chance to be around these guys.
Yeah, and that's the truth of it at that point. I was old enough at that point. Dad would never take me in a dressing room. He would never allow me in a dressing room. But I could meet those guys, and I could stand in the back, and I would shake hands with them, and I would talk to them, and I would get to be around them some. I had such a growth in the wrestling profession from a child all the way through my entire career. I probably had contact or knew who they were, had seen them wrestle, had talked to them personally with literally thousands of wrestlers. And it helped me immensely as I was going on in the sport to become a wrestler and later on a promoter. It really helped me as a promoter more than even being a wrestler. And it's an unreal opportunity to be born into a wrestling family. It's so difficult to get to be a wrestler if you don't have that type of the beginning, that history to deal with and to be a part of. It just makes it so much easier to get involved and to finally start to being used properly and to gain the respect. It takes a long time for someone that doesn't come from a wrestling family to get to the same spot that a person that comes from is going to get there.
And that's when you stop and think about all the great second generation wrestlers that there have been, that does kind of make sense. Very few guys get a chance of second generation guys and aren't accepted or don't get over. For the most part, it seems like because you grow up around it, because you understand it, you should be able or understand what it takes to navigate a dressing room. You had the great fortune of having a father who was not only a great wrestler, but also a great promoter himself with a great mind for it. So it's almost as if you were born to do what you ended up doing, Stud.
Yeah, that's what I've always said. You know, I was born and bred to be a darn wrestler. And thank goodness I had the size that went along with it, the necessity that you had to have. I had the size and some ability and some athletic ability. And just being able to see it and the development of all of it and understanding how it works from the bottom all the way to the top, it made it so easy for me to make the transitions that you have to make in a professional wrestling career to be successful.
Hey, Stud, about 45 minutes in here to our 60-minute Broadway. How about we take a couple questions, if you don't mind?
That'll be fine. Let's do it.
Wesley Rogers from Tellico Plains, Tennessee. Beautiful country, Tellico Plains, Tennessee. Wants to know the following. And by the way, we're going to continue to relate back to our Andre the Giant Super Stud cast. If you missed the Super Stud cast and want more information, I want to encourage you to jump over to tnstud.com. That's the Stud's website. You'll find more information out about the two-hour special Super Stud cast that we did on the life and times of Andre the Giant, with another hour to come here in a week or so, which will be made free to those that purchased the Super Stud cast. In the meantime, let's go ahead. We want to get a couple questions in here because we don't want to keep the Andre stuff away from everybody. So Wesley Rogers of Tellico Plains, Tennessee is wondering, was Andre easy to work with? And where would you rank him among the greatest, Stud?
Well, I think last week we talked about, somebody asked a question, that I ever wrestled Andre, and never had the pleasure, I guess you would say it would be a pleasure, to work with Andre in a singles match. But I work with him in many, many battle royals. I know that I've been in the ring with Andre enough to know that he had skills. In fact, for his size, Andre was really very, very skilled. I remember a conversation with Andre one time in which I said, Andre, what all kinds of moves can you do? And he says, Ron, I can drop kick. And I said, wait a minute, you can drop kick? And he goes, yes, Ron. And I said, why don't you drop kick? And he says, because Vince Sr. told me he didn't want to see me do those types of moves. He wanted me to be the big man that couldn't be moved around. And Vince Sr. and Junior as well, they like that big body, those big body guys, the Gorilla Monsoons, and those guys that are big and hard to move around. But I was amazed, and I never had Andre. I wanted to. I wished I had gone into buildings that we were in when there was nobody in there and said, shoot me in, Andre, and drop kick me. I would have liked to have seen him do the drop kick. So He had the skills to do whatever he was, pretty much he wanted to do. Hell, he played soccer as a kid. I mean, you know, he was a talented athlete. So he could have been a great worker. He had great matches. I've seen him have good matches. I mentioned one last week with Ronnie Garvin in a single match. Great match. So I know he could do that. Now, as far as rating him as one of the greatest, I have to say, when you're talking about Andre, you're not talking about a regular person. You're not talking about an ordinary wrestler. You're talking about something that's spectacular and somebody who's really different. If you're going to look at a guy's skills, that's one way to look at a great wrestler, is he got all the skills? Can he do all the moves? Another way to look at him is how much does he draw? Some guys have tremendous talent. They can do everything, but they can't piece it all together into a package that makes money, that draws people, that excites the fans. And Andre, that's where he was maybe the greatest, is when you put Andre on your card, you knew you're going to have a full building, because he is a spectacle. He's a entity unto himself. There's nothing like him. You can't go see Andre wrestle every week. You can see wrestlers wrestle every week, but it's not often you can go see that gigantic human being that Andre was. And people were just amazed. I would sometimes go and watch when he went to the ring. I like to watch the fans because their mouths would be open. They would be in true awe. So I got to say that, you know, I think, you know, Andre, in that form alone and the amount of money he drew and his great appeal to the masses, it would make him probably one, if not the greatest, certainly one of the greatest of all time.
And I like how you put that, too, because Andre was more of an attraction than he was a let's build the territory with this guy or let's build our promotion around this guy. He was more. For much of his career, he was more of an attraction. So great question there from Wesley Rogers of Teleco Plains, Tennessee, who got the stud in some wonderful conversation regarding Andre the Giant. Another question here, George Pantas, who hails from Parts Unknown, along with the Wolfman and various other Parts Unknown wrestlers through the years. From a promoter's point of view, another Andre-specific question here, Stud. From a promoter's point of view, what specific accommodations did you have to make for Andre because of his size? What other special demands were there because of Andre the Giant?
Good question, too. Well, first of all, off the top of my head, no one ever called when you booked Andre. The first time I ever started my Southeastern company and I had Andre wrestle for me personally, I never got a call from anyone out of New York that said, you got to provide Andre with this, so you have to provide Andre with that. Andre was not the type of person that would come to you and expect to be able to ask for something or demand something. He just was not that type of guy. He was such a down-to-earth and easy-to-deal-with person. There were certain things right away, though, I recognized that Andre needed. One was a king-size bed. I mean, yeah, I need a king-size bed. I know darn well he's going to need a king-size bed. Another is a vehicle in which to be taken from town to town. I was lucky back in those days. I had a lot of guys working for me that drove those conversion vans, and Andre loved it. When he came to work for me, I don't think a lot of other territories guys had those vans. Andre would say, Ron, I want to go with Joe LaDuc, or I want to go with Ronnie Garvin, or whoever it was that had the big conversion vans. And obviously, Andre was such a wonderful personality. Guys loved to take him. They loved to be around him. So there was never a problem getting the right person to give Andre a ride is in his conversion van. I would put him in a hotel that had a king-size bed. I also knew he liked to have a drink or two. He liked to have some beer when the matches are over and he gets dropped off. I would try to find a hotel that had a nightclub built into it so that he didn't have to go somewhere. He didn't have to take a ride. I was very good about finding who liked Andre and asking them to feed him. guys would take him to eat. And if they didn't, they had certain women that I knew that liked to cook. And I said, hey, would you like a cooked meal for Andre? So I pretty much fed him. I saw he rested well. I saw he traveled well. Andre was always happy working for me. And he told me, and he always made it plain that I was one of his favorite places to go and one of the places that he liked to be a lot. In fact, he, on several occasions, says, Ron, I want to work here for good. I said, well, Andre, and you mentioned it, Tony, good point. He's not the type of guy you can build a territory around. He's your spectacle. He's that something different that people are going to come to see. You couldn't keep him there for a long period of time. That's why Vince, when Vince Sr. got control of Andre, he was smart enough to realize that I cannot keep this guy working without hurting him. He will lose his spark that he has, this excitement that he generates, and I need to get him out there to those other territories and get him away from here, bring him in occasionally for a shot in the arm. And that's what I like to do. That's what other promoters like to do as time went on. They like to bring him in for the shot in the arm. So that's, I guess, my question. That's the answer to the gentleman's question as best I can. I fed him good. I made sure he got good rest. I made sure he rode with somebody he liked and in the vehicle in which he was comfortable. I just loved when he was there. And so did not just me, but everybody in my territory. They would all take their shot at getting to spend some time with Andre. He was a remarkable human being.
Still, what I love about when you start talking about Andre and thinking about him and accommodating him and cooking for him, most people think, well, that's okay, cook a meal for a guy. You wait till you hear some of the stories in the Super Studcast. And for those that did know what I'm talking about, cook a meal for Andre the Giant. If you're getting ready to cook for Andre the Giant, you better know that you're going to do some serious cooking. You've heard the term cooking for an army. That's pretty much what you're about to get into. But I just love those Andre stories. I could listen to that stuff all day. And we've got two solid hours of it, Stud, in the Super Stud cast. And I understand the response a week and a half in has just been terrific.
It's been great. It's been very, very good. Like you had mentioned earlier, it's going to be there. It's going to be there for a long, long time. You can go get it and listen to it anytime you want to. You'll get that second broadcast once you donate for the first one. It's only a couple of bucks. And you can go to tnstud.com, and you can actually click on Super Studcast. It'll be right there in the icons across the top. You click on that Super Studcast, it's going to take you right there. You'll be able to, within 3 minutes, you're going to be listening to what is probably one of the most unique podcasts that's ever been done, that two-hour Super Studcast about that particular individual. And you can also go to Patreon, patreon.com/studcast. Same deal. Within 3 minutes, you're going to be up and listening to what I hope when you listen to it, you're going to say, that is the most remarkable 2 hours I've ever listened to and never been a part of. Just a real honor to be able to do it, Tony. To be able to do one of those type of things is a tremendous honor. And we're going to do it next month. We're going to do it every month. We've already laid out February on Sunday, February 11th. We're going to do the third world countries. We're going to be down there in the Bahamas and in Puerto Rico and in the Caymans. I got stories. I just love the Bahamas stories. The Bahamas in itself, it's worth 10 times what the heck we're asking just to hear how it is to wrestle in the Bahamas back in the day. And I'm really looking forward to it. And, you know, next week, I think, Tony, I'm close enough. I'm going to get us into my first match. We're going to talk a little bit about my very first match. I'm still in college. I'm sneaking off to wrestle because my dad wants me to wrestle. He gets me booked. And then I tell him, I have to inform him. I say, Dad, I'm on scholarship. And if they find out I'm a wrestler and I'm getting paid, I lose my scholarship. And he was like, oh, what do you mean? You mean they can get you for that? And I said, yeah, they can. I don't need to be wrestling. I'm still playing basketball. So we're going to get into my first match next week. And I think once we got to that point, Tony, and it's wonderful, it's going to be episode number 30. 30 episodes I have spent talking about my family, my grandfather Roy, all his brothers, all that group, my dad, and we're about to get to the third generation, to me, to Rob, to Jimmy, to Roy Lee Welch and Jackie Welch and all those young Fields boys. And we're going to really crank this thing up because we're going to start talking about things I really know from better than anything that I've talked to this point. We're going to talk about me, you know, and I'm really looking forward to it. We've spent a lot of weeks laying the foundation here, and we're at that part now where this story's like a big giant flower. It's about to blossom here, and I think it's only going to get better from here.
Stud, you're my man on the way out. Is there anything else you'd care to add? Because this has been an awesome addition here on the Studcast.
Nothing that I can think of except for thanking the fans, all of the fans. I don't care if you purchased the Super Studcast, that's wonderful. If you didn't, that's fine. We're here to do these Studcasts for you. We're going to do these suckers for as long as we can, and we're going to throw these other ones out there. If you like them, you want to listen to them, I think it's just a couple of bucks. It's a ridiculously small amount for the 3 hours of entertainment we're going to give you for it. It's just a pleasure to be here sitting in this seat. I love it. Thank everybody, all the thousands and thousands of fans worldwide, and I mean that literally worldwide, that are just every week sending the comments and thanking me for doing what I do here and what you do here, Tony. It's a pleasure.
Stud is the man. No question about it. It's been a lot of fun sitting with him this week. I do want to remind you, if you want to get up with a Stud on Facebook, Ron Fuller, Tennessee Stud. Again, Ron Fuller, Tennessee Stud is the site or the address there. Ron Fuller, Tennessee Stud. Instagram, Twitter, Ron Fuller Welch. Again, Ron Fuller Welch is how you will find the Stud on Instagram and also on Twitter. And then, of course, the website, tnstud.com. tnstud.com. On the way out, before we throw it to the great David Summers, who's got that tremendous radio voice, I do want to remind you that next time we get together, we will be in episode 30. Time flies, you're having fun. The Stud will take to the ring. In the meantime, I do want to say my name is Tony Basilio. You can find me on Twitter at Tony Basilio, B as in boy, A-S-I-L-I-O. I've got my own website, TonyBasilio.com. Talk sports in Knoxville, talk about a bunch of Southeastern Conference and college football type things. And we have an Andre the Giant in our midst right now in the University of Alabama. Will not be defeated for whatever reason. So they kind of take the fun out of everything, winning all the time. In the meantime, for the Tennessee Stud, Ron Fuller, this is Tony Basilio wishing you a great week. Let's come back and do this again as we saddle it up on your Studcast.
Thanks for joining us today for this historic Studcast. The true story continues next week. So fool Nelson your friends and point them in our direction for another ride with the Tennessee Stud.
One, two, three.
This is David Summers saying so long from the Great Smoky Mountains. This Studcast is distributed by Arcadian Vanguard Podcast Network.